From the City of Angels, near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, Evil Entities. Then later on, Friday the 13th, Open Lines. Here's what's happening. Johnson & Johnson has been ordered to pay $4.7 billion in damages to 22 women who alleged that its talc powders caused them to develop ovarian cancer. A jury in the state of Missouri initially awarded $550 million in compensation. Then they added $4.1 billion in punitive damages. The verdict comes as the pharmaceutical giant battles some 9,000 legal cases involving its signature baby powder. Johnson & Johnson said it was deeply disappointed, plans to appeal. What a huge story that is. Two Democratic U.S. senators have asked the Federal Trade Commission to investigate privacy problems related to internet-connected televisions. And also, a federal grand jury has now indicted 12 Russian intelligence officers for hacking emails from the Hillary Clinton campaign and the Democratic Party during the 2016 election. The 12 defendants are members of GRU, which is the Russian intelligence agency now. Lauren Weinstein, our expert on the internet. Lauren, first, I want to get your reaction to this hacking situation. What do you think they were after?
Yeah, I think we know a lot of details now that we're really just speculating about for quite a period here. They were after Democratic Party emails. They were after planning documents, personnel details, anything like that that they could get their hands on. What's really interesting now is the level of detail that investigators have got. They know pretty much who did it. We see these cases like
and where they did it and how they did it.
They know the detail. They even know how they paid for it. It turns out that there was a lot of Bitcoin used to pay for fake servers that were bought. A lot of this was done through servers that claimed to be one thing, websites that claimed to be one site or one organization when they were really the Russians, the GRU, all along. So they tried to cover their tracks with Bitcoin in some cases, but it turns out Bitcoin can actually be tracked backwards. The blockchain actually creates a method that can be used to figure out who did each transaction.
That's
there's
right.
ways to conflate that and confuse it. And they tried to do that too, but in the end, it looks like most of the details of this Russian operation have been figured out.
Now, what's your reaction to the story about smart televisions invading privacy, that they should be investigated? What is this?
Yeah, I think we've talked about some other aspects of this. You know, some of these smart TVs that had problems where it turns out the microphones or the cameras could be turned on remotely, which just isn't a good thing with your television, especially in the bedroom, perhaps. This current investigation that's being called for, I think, is more oriented toward the question of data collection practices. The issue with these smart TVs is that just about everything you do on them, every click of a remote, everything you watch, everything you ask for, everything you look up, is collected and is passed back to the companies. And they will have privacy policies, but of course most people don't read them. They just take the defaults. So this is an area, you know, people don't think about the fact that their television is paying this much attention to what they do and that this kind of data is being collected that way. And so what these senators are calling for now is an investigation into this. I think that's going to be worthwhile. If nothing else, consumers really need absolute control over these systems, because it just isn't reasonable that you're sitting there trying to just watch TV and essentially you're being spied on.
Good point. Lauren, thanks. Have yourself a good weekend. So imagine this. You're in a jet plane flying 30-some thousand feet in the air, and all of a sudden, the jet plunges 25,000 feet. Whoa! Why, in this case, an Air China jet? The pilot was vaping in the cockpit and caused decompression when he turned off the air conditioning in a bid to hide the smoke. Jeez. Two companies leading the pack in the pursuit of space tourism say they're just months away from their first out-of-this-world passenger flights, though neither has set a firm date. Virgin Galactic, founded by British billionaire Richard Branson, and Blue Origin by Amazon creator Jeff Bezos, are racing to be the first to finish their tests, with both companies using radically different technology. They will charge thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars for space tourists to go up there. That's A lot of money, indeed. Well, her legs were tingling, but why? A 35-year-old French woman went to the emergency room to report a tingling electric sensation in her legs and trouble walking. The cause? Here we go. A tapeworm lodged in her spine, swelling so much it hindered her ability to walk. Ew. A sheriff's deputy in Texas plans to donate one of his kidneys to a man who has been having difficulty finding a match. Sergeant Jay Jones, what a guy, with the Taylor County Sheriff's Department, has decided to donate his kidney to a Clayton Bolt after the Abilene, Texas man was unable to find someone in his family that fits certain transplant criteria, such as blood typing, tissue typing, and cross-matching. The sheriff, Jay Jones, matches perfectly. Mars approaching Earth for a 15-year close encounter on July 27th. What other things are out there with a close encounter? Let's check in with Peter Davenport from the National UFO Reporting Center. Peter, what do you have for us this week?
Well, good evening, George, and you're right. It's been a very busy week.
There's
a lot going on, and I'm pleased to bring to the Coast audience a few of the 126 new reports that we've just posted to our website this evening. I'd like to begin with the East Coast and specifically the two Carolinas, and I'll then sort of work my way west. 3 nights ago, July 10th, at approximately 10 p.m., six adults were standing on a deck near Topsail, I think it's pronounced Topsail Island, North Carolina, looking southeast out over the Atlantic Ocean when they became aware of a very bright orange light just above the horizon. Well, at this stage, my antennas would cause me to suspect a sighting of the planet Mars, of course, currently very bright in the southeast late evening sky. However, the report gets very much more interesting because the object suddenly disappeared from the witness's view for a few seconds, then equally suddenly reappeared well above the horizon, and a second identical object appeared lower and to the right of the original object. Seconds later, one of the objects faded and the second one disappeared. Both of them disappeared permanently. Very interesting case. The witnesses remained outside for the next several hours looking for a reappearance, but saw nothing except for the planet Mars. However, the plot now thickens, George, because approximately 10 minutes after this first sighting, there was a second sighting down on Carolina Beach, south of Topsail Island, where people reported exactly the same thing. It may have been either the same sighting or a follow-on sighting identical to the first. And finally, the last report from the Carolinas comes from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. How many times have I mentioned that place? Three adults were out walking on the beach at about 11 p.m., so now about roughly an hour after the sightings up in North Carolina, and they saw an actual craft, they believe, with red lights all around its periphery hovering over the beach near Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. All three of those sightings appear adjacent to one another in our posted reports for July 10th, and they're well worth reading, I feel. Now, briefly out to the Midwest, and I'll be very brief, George. Grand Rapids, Michigan, on the 11th of July, this is just 3 or 4 hours after the sightings in the Carolinas, gentleman saw a manta ray-shaped craft from his car with one end of it tipped up at a 45-degree angle. Very interesting sighting. I recommend people read that case on our website. And finally, this morning, or the morning of the 12th, very interesting sightings over eastern and central Oregon of an object that was round and almost translucent. I'm working on trying to figure out whether it might have been a scientific balloon, helium-filled high-altitude balloon, but a photojournalist captured it with a 300-millimeter lens, and he says it's very interesting. So a lot going on. Many reports from tonight. I'll report them next week.
We'll talk to you then. Thanks, Peter. Peter Davenport from the National UFO Reporting Center. Up next, the greatest storyteller ever born, Lionel Fanthorpe, back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. One of our favorites, Lionel Fanthorpe with us, born in England, has worked as a journalist and teacher. He's been a director of media studies at Cardiff Academy. He is an ordained Anglican priest working part-time and unpaid for the church in Wales. He's the president of the Association for the Scientific Study of Anomalous Phenomena. He's the president of the British UFO Research Association as well. He's been a popular television and radio presenter, celebrity guest on a number of chat shows, author of more than 250 books. And here he is back on Coast to Coast after about a year and a half hiatus. Where in the heck have you been?
Hi, George. It's great to be back with you. Really is. No, I've had some health problems, which is what's kept me away. And it was way back. But there's nothing worse than a friend telling you about his health problems. But what I had was a thing called arrhythmia, which means your heart goes at rather strange different speeds for no particular reason. And mine at its worst was doing 220 beats a minute, which meant that no oxygenated blood was getting around. Anyhow, I had a marvelous hospital who fitted a gadget for me called an ICD unit, which was an internal cardiac defibrillator. And since I've had that in, life's getting back to normal.
Good.
I can't thank these guys enough.
Was it touch and go for a while?
Well, don't want to exaggerate, but when it first hit me at the 220 beats, I'd just been out shopping with Patricia, and she somehow got me back to the car. I pretty well collapsed.
Oh, my God, Lynn.
Trying to breathe, but, you know, you weren't getting any oxygen because it was just slapping up and down on an empty chamber. So they told me at the hospital. Anyhow, marvelous little wife that I've got, and she got me back to the car, drove me up to the hospital, and from there they rushed me down from Cardiff to London, where there's one of the central UK heart hospitals, and brilliant guy in there who just invented these units, fitted it in for me.
And Lionel, we've had a number of guests on the program, doctors, who have told us that they believe arrhythmia is caused by some kind of electrical issue because the spinal cord might be squeezing some kind of nerve to the heart, and it throws off electrical impulses and basically tricks the heart. So that's something for you to just put away for some added knowledge.
Yeah, that is very interesting to hear. As I said, these are brilliant guys who looked after me, and I can't thank them enough because I was 83 last birthday, and I still feel as if I'm in my 50s.
Super.
Life is good.
Every Christmas Eve, I run the Lionel Fanthorpe, the 'Twas the Night Before Christmas clip that you did for me a long time ago. It is as pristine now as it was then. And Christmas Eve, we'll be running during the middle of the week this year. I'll be running it again.
I am truly honored, and I'm very grateful, and I'm so glad it's of some use to such a wonderful station as yours.
Now, what have you been? Have you had chance to work on any projects or anything?
Well, we've just got the third and sort of final volume of our trilogy. I started it way back. It was one of our most successful books. It was called The Black Lion. And that was about 40 years ago when that came out. And in the last year, really, while I was resting and recovering, I got the other two volumes done, called The Golden Tiger, and the third one is Zotala the Priest. And what underlies the science fantasy adventures is that they are the three parts, because, you know, I used to lecture in psychology, and I'm fascinated by it. And they're the three parts of human nature. The black lion is the representation of the part of a person which is ambitious, wants to get to the top, wants to win. He's the warrior hero. The golden tiger is the hedonist, the pleasure lover, the man who likes his food and his drink and all the other things that make life good. And the third one, Zotala the priest, represents the spiritual side of us, what you might call the best side, the good side, the part of us which tries to help others, which tries to find a philosophy, a religion, a theology. So you've got the ambitious human being, the pleasure-loving human being, and the spiritual human being. And I've made each of them into a character in the three books.
Well, good for you. I remember the story you told us. I still get emails about it. I'm going to probably have you do it again. Spring-Heeled Jack, a great story.
Wow. It certainly was. And, of course, he was never found, never caught. And he was the...
And he was in London, wasn't he?
He was in London at roughly the same period as the infamous Jack the Ripper.
Aha.
And Jack would escape when a crowd gathered and tried to catch him by these incredible jumps. His sort of rascally misdeeds, if he saw a girl on her own and unprotected, he would try and attack her. With the obvious motivations, and her screams for help would bring, well, a guy like you or me, if we were passing and he heard a girl screaming for help, we'd go and see what we could do for her. And as soon as two or three guys like us appeared on the scene and went after Jack to rescue the girl, he would escape from us by jumping from a standing start to an incredible height. Suppose we got him cornered in what we thought was a back alley and there was a wall at the end that was 8 or 9 feet high. Jack could leap from a standing start to the top of the wall, and by the time we'd found a means of put a ladder and climbed the blessed wall, Jack was gone.
Long gone. Long gone. Now, did he have something in his boots or something?
This is one of those wonderful theories, George, that nobody knows how he did it. And a number of attempts were made by some of the scientists and technicians of the day to put springs in boots. In fact, one army unit tried it and to see whether this would give them an advantage in a battle situation. And one or two of the tough young soldiers who were trying these spring boots actually landed badly and suffered broken ankles. So that it could have been what Jack had perfected. But nobody has, apparently, not to my knowledge, has ever emulated it successfully. All sorts of other theories were that he was an alien who came from, a humanoid alien, who came from a very high gravity world. And as we know, Earthman on the moon, with very low gravity compared to the gravity of Earth, could jump phenomenal distances.
Like Superman-type powers, huh?
Yeah, with Superman-like powers, because we would be able to perform something like 5 or 6 times the lift or the distance that we could here on Earth, where we're bound by the gravity that we were born into.
Just amazing, Lionel. Just amazing that this would be going on for so many years. He was never caught, and he looked human, though, didn't he?
He looked human, yeah. And I said, that's only one of the theories. There's the theory of the spring heels in the boots, which is why he was called Spring-Heeled Jack. And then there's the theory that he was from a planet with a much higher gravity than ours. And therefore, they'll train a bit there. Other theories suggest that he may have had some abnormality that powered those leg muscles. You know, we were talking about one or two sort of medical things, and you were telling me about the spinal nerves. There's a strong possibility that an abnormality could be beneficial rather than harmful.
I've been pretty athletic, but I'm not sure I could even jump over a chair these days anymore, Lionel. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back and talk more with the greatest storyteller ever born, Lionel Fanthorpe, right here on Coast to Coast AM. And his website is linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. One of his books, Mysteries of Templar Treasure and the Holy Grail. Next hour, Bill Bean joins us as we talk about Friday the 13th and evil entities. But we've got Lionel Fanthorpe with more of his stories when we come back in a moment here on Coast to Coast AM. Well, you're doing a splendid job picking up the tickets in Asheville, North Carolina for our Saturday, August 25th event. As a matter of fact, I talked about some great seats that were still available and to snap them up quickly, and they're gone. But now we've got, this is what we've got. Five handicap seats available, three very good orchestra center seats available, and then some on the sides, and then, of course, the balcony's open. So go to our website, coasttocoastam.com, click events, and then you can click the Asheville, North Carolina icon section and get your tickets that way. And welcome back to Coast. We're back with Lionel Fanthorpe, of course, the greatest storyteller ever born. I hope you like that title I gave you, Lionel.
I do indeed, John, and I'm very grateful. I'd never have claimed it for myself, but when it comes from a friend like you, I will very happily accept it.
And Lionel, with the president in England, with the Queen, what's been the reaction out there?
Well, it's difficult to say. The Queen and the Prime Minister and all the top end, the royal family and the top politicians have given your president the honor and respect that President of the USA so richly deserves. But there are some very active demonstrators.
Oh yeah,
who've been putting on marches all over the country. Who do not particularly like the president. So it's been very mixed at the top end, and he said some truly beautiful things about Theresa May, our prime minister, said that the special relationship between the USA and us is not only special, but very special. And I, with so many friends in the States, like your good self, I was very pleased to hear that, because I think that guys like you, who are friends, have that special relationship, and if there's enough of us each side of the Atlantic, then it becomes even greater and more powerful. And, I would just say I'm very, very pro the USA, and its president has to be given the honor he deserves.
You are one of the good guys, Lionel. You always have been, my friend. I hope you live another 100 years.
Hey, that would be terrific. There's just one other tiny point to make. When you did that lovely intro for me, I'm not with the church in Wales anymore.
Oh, you're
not. I'm
an
independent priest.
Okay.
That's the only thing that needs changing. But I'm now an independent priest.
Good for you. I know when you started with me back about 15, 16 years ago, you were about 67 years old then. So you've got to be a spry 83 or so.
I'm 83. I was born in 1935.
Good for you.
I must tell you an amazing little episode about 1935. You know that a lot of people worldwide love to get a number plate for the car, which says something about them. Now, although everybody calls me Lionel, my first name is Robert, and I started using my second name because my father and I, before Patricia and I got married, I was still living at home. My father's name was Robert, and it was the only name he had. He was just Robert Fanthorpe. And he said to me one day, "Boy, I keep getting all your mail. Use your second name instead, because I was here first." And I said, "Sure, Dad." So my initials, R.L.F., born in 1935. I was walking down the street in Cardiff, and there parked on the other side of the road was a small car with the number plate R.L.F. 93 5. And I rushed across to this guy, you know, his wife sitting in the car, and I said, would you consider selling me that number plate? And I said, you've got my initials and the year I was born on there.
Huh.
I give you £100 for it. And the little wife turned to her husband, and I don't know, and she was cradling a baby. And she said, oh, John, if we sell him the number plate, we can buy a buggy for the baby.
Oh, my gosh.
So I gave him £100 and bought his number plate, and it's been on my car ever since.
Why?
When we were talking about my age and the 1935 piece, I thought, yeah, I must tell George about the number plate.
That's a great story. I guess there you can transfer plates from car to car. Oh, you can do that here too.
Yeah, I don't know how popular it is in the USA, but it's pretty popular here. And the funniest one I saw, and I don't know why the guy had done this, but he had the two letters S L, then 0, and a figure 8, and then a space. So it spelled out slob.
I love it.
And I thought, if I'd ever wanted to buy a car with that, the first thing I would have done is get rid of the slob.
Yeah, that one I would have gotten rid of. Of all the stories that you've told us over the years, what story for you has been one of your favorites?
Wow.
And you've had many. You've had many.
I have, and I think that it's one of the true investigations, the real-life mysteries, that has perhaps appealed to me most. We were working then in Norwich in the county of Norfolk on the east coast, and there's an old cathedral there, must be hundreds of years old, and next to it, coming up from what they call Cathedral Close, which is the name of the little road leading to the cathedral, was a wonderful, historical, Victorian gentleman's toilet. And it was down at the bottom of a flight of steps. And what happened was this, and I've always regarded it as one of the most amazing mysteries of all time. A dear old gentleman, pensioner, and his wife had been shopping. They parked their car not far from this old Victorian comfort station where you go down the stairs to use it. And the gentleman went down. There were no ladies' toilets in the area, just this one for the gentleman. And his wife, sitting in the car, got increasingly worried. 10 minutes past, 15
mm-hmm.
minutes. Had he had a heart attack? Had he fallen on the steps? She couldn't go down and look because it was a gentleman's only toilet. A traffic warden came past, and they're normally just there to make sure cars are parked correctly. She called to him and said, please could he help her, and would he mind going down to see if her husband had fallen or had a heart attack or taken ill in some other way? And he said, certainly, madam. And very nice guy, helpful, went down the steps, opened all the cubicle doors, checked the wall space. Well, there was nobody in it. It was totally empty. And he came back and he said, there's nobody down there, ma'am. I've checked everything as carefully as I can. And she said, I just don't know what to do. He said, well, wait here a bit longer and maybe he'll turn up from somewhere where you didn't think he'd gone. And within another 5 minutes, the missing husband turned up, ran across to the car, sat down beside her in his driving seat and said, I'll tell you in a minute, love. I've just got to recover a bit.
Jeez.
And when he'd recovered, he said he had used the toilet, come back up the steps, and looked around for his car, which wasn't there.
But we know it was.
Yeah, it was. It had been parked. And he then told his wife that he'd looked around all the other streets and had seen cars passing almost silently, and they were of shapes and designs he had never seen. Not knowing what to do, he thought, well, I've heard of things like time slips. And if you go back to where you were, it might correct itself. He went back down into the toilets, came up again, and everything was normal, and he got into the car and told him what had happened. And evidently, when the traffic warden had gone down to look for him to help her, the place had been empty because he had come up and had wandered around looking for his car. He seemed to have been thrown a few years into the future. Took no harm from it, went back down again, which was a very sensible thing to do, because if a time slip does occur, and if you can get back to your location, there's a fair chance that when it resolves itself, you will be back where you were when it threw you out. Now, I found that to be one of the biggest mysteries, because time travel, time slips, is this going to be the next thing? Just as we've conquered space, are we one day going to conquer time?
Well, you know, Lionel, hundreds of thousands of people disappear on this planet every year.
Yeah.
People just don't know where they go. What if they go into these time warps and they just can't get back?
Yeah, I think this is very, very possible. As you say, people vanish without trace.
Just gone.
And sometimes there's the case of the boy, I can't think of his name for a second, but you'll know, that the one who turned up mysteriously in that German town, and he just wasn't from there. And a passerby suddenly sort of saw this lad just appear. Now, what if he had been one of those, as you described, who had stepped into a time slip, and at some point in the future he would have perhaps been visiting that town, and now here he was, Nuremberg. It's called the Child of Nuremberg. And that could well have been the opposite of the disappearing phenomenon that you've just described to me. And there were so many.
Oh, my God. Did you ever hear of the case? It happened in New York. And a cab driver was driving down one of the roads not speeding, but doing a, you know, he's at a pretty good clip. And all of a sudden, right in front of him, out of nowhere, pops an individual. Now, this person wasn't walking across the street. It was nothing like that. The cab driver was driving down the road at a 40-mile-an-hour clip, and all of a sudden, a person appeared, just popped up right in front of him. He hit him with the cab and killed him. Now, upon examining the guy, he's dressed in 1800 clothes, and they realized that he wasn't from that time period. He somehow went through a time warp in the 1800s, appeared in the 1900s, and got killed by a cab. Oh, unbelievable.
Yeah, it is. There are so many amazing mysteries in this world of ours, and it's... they are. They're just phenomenal. In that case, as you say, it's the opposite side of the disappearance. And it makes you wonder, one of the theories that's always appealed to me that I think needs a great deal more investigation is the parallel universe theory.
Yes.
And that the things that we don't do here, we may well do in the parallel universe into which we have slipped. And so there's not only the risk of being caught in a time trap, but if you step across into the parallel universe, in one of my stories, I use the parallel universe piece, and it's one that goes back to the history of the Middle Ages, when the king had got some of his knights to kill Thomas of Becket, who was then the Archbishop of Canterbury. And I wrote it so that you've got a parallel universe in which Becket, who had been a crusader, runs for the altar in which he has left, as a sort of gift to God, the great two-handed crusading sword that he'd used when fighting in the Holy Land. These three assassins come at him with hand axes. They think Becket has gone to say a final prayer. He hasn't. He's gone to reach for his sword.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've only got a hand axe, a man with a four-foot sword is going to win the battle. And in this version, Becket kills the three of them. An old man sitting at the back of the church sees, not very clearly, the flurry as the altar cloth comes off, and runs out telling everybody that an angel had appeared and given Becket a sword. The king abdicates, Becket is declared king, and there's a whole parallel universe going on in which King Thomas, or Emperor Thomas the 23rd, is now ruling Europe as a rather like the USA. And he's a very good and loving man and a wonderful ruler. And the magic sword has been preserved in an old inn, and the innkeeper's daughter is attacked. She runs for the sword, and her parallel self from the Becket Empire comes through the gap between the two probability tracks, and she is a professional soldier and defends her alter ego in our world. Now, that fascinated me as to whether you could have a parallel self in a parallel world who, if they came close enough together, could leap through the gap and come and rescue you.
It's magical indeed. Lionel, we are running out of time. I want to thank you for being on the program. Do stay in touch with us. I know you've been in touch with Tom over the last year and a half. He's been giving us some updates on your health. And it just sounds great that you're coming back.
It's a privilege. Anytime you need me, George, I'd be honored and delighted to be on your wonderful show. God bless you all.
Lionel's website linked up at coasttocoastam.com. And again, the name of a couple of his books, Unsolved Mysteries of the Sea, Mysteries of Templar Treasure, and the Holy Grail. He's got more than 250 books out there. So I'm not going to go through every title. We'll be here all night. Up next, Bill Bean joins us as we talk about spiritual attacks, evil entities. And yes, this is Friday the 13th. And then later on tonight, we will have those Friday the 13th open lines right here on Coast to Coast AM.